It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You're all right.
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
The incubation period for COVID-19 is up to 14 days. The average is about 5 to 7 days. And so what that means is we had Thanksgiving and people returning from Thanksgiving about a week ago. So this week, we're going to see the impact of that Thanksgiving surge. And I'm afraid that all those numbers that you just presented, Erica, they're going to go up. We're going to see increases in hospitalizations, and hospitals are already on the brink. So where is the reserve capacity? Where are patients going to be going at this point? I'm also deeply concerned about deaths going up. At some point, we're going to be surpassing 3,000 deaths per day, maybe even 4,000 deaths per day. Our surge right now is intensifying. It is amplifying. And I hope that people realize that hospitals are the last line of defense. The first line of defense is the community. And we really need everyone to do their part to flatten the curve. And that means, of course, wearing a mask, keeping physical distancing, but also so critically at this point, avoiding indoor gatherings. Anyone who has not canceled their plans yet for Christmas and the New Year should cancel their travel plans and absolutely not gather indoors with anyone who's not in their immediate family.
Thank you, Dr. Leanna Wen. It sounds so delightful. If you listen to CNN, that's what you hear day and night. Night and day, day and night. Leanna Wen is a doctor. She's also an op-ed columnist for the Washington Post and a CNN medical analyst. So you have to cancel Christmas. And the reason why there's an upsurge is because some of you actually celebrated Thanksgiving. That's kind of the nature of things, and that is the madness of the left. I want to talk about it a little bit because we haven't talked about the effects of COVID on our country much lately, and we need to address that because it's not going away. I want to remind you that we're in the middle of trying to decide who's going to be president here, and there is a very clear choice when it comes to this. Joe Biden made a statement when he was still running, and this is what he said about how he's going to handle COVID. This might be your future. Let's listen.
We're going to act to get COVID under control. On day one of my presidency, I'll put in action a plan I've been talking about for months, already laid out, a national mandate. Mask wearing, social distancing, testing, tracing, all things, as President Obama just said, that should have and could have been put in place months and months ago.
All right, so there you go. Mandatory masking, mandatory social distancing. Just sounds like fun, doesn't it? Just for perpetuity, I guess, until you all get a vaccine, which you must prove that you've had before you can actually have a life, he doesn't say this. I'm extrapolating. I'm guessing that this is the next step, because it probably is, that you won't be able to go anywhere or do anything or enter a college or go to school or go to a restaurant or fly unless you have a card that says you've had the vaccination. That's exactly what I think's coming next, just so you know. All right, and then we have, for CNN also, we have another medical expert, Dr. Peter Hotez, and while he has some things to say, too, about what he sees as the future, let's listen.
I think it's important to have that vaccine out there to make people understand that they're not going to have to practice aggressive social distancing in perpetuity. This is time limited because vaccines are on the other side. And the problem is people are being incredibly reckless still, that people still think that often it's a hoax or that the deaths from COVID-19 are due to other causes. So we have to send a clear message to the American people. Look, don't lose your life over the next few weeks. I mean, the numbers are just horrible. We're looking at potentially 400,000 or 500,000 Americans who will lose their life a week or so after the inauguration, when all we need to do is get them to the other side, get them vaccinated, and they'll live a normal lifespan. And that's been a really tough message, especially in the middle part of the country, a lot of them red states especially, that still think that this is not real.
Oh, we think it's real, all right. We just don't think that what you're saying is accurate. I don't know why you would say what you say, doctor, because I'm hearing so many different things. I just don't think we can be sure about this at all. And he's saying, don't lose your life. After the inauguration, after Trump is gone, Joe Biden will miraculously appear and everything's going to be fine. Except another specialist, I wish I had this clip, said, you're going to have to wear your mask and social distance even after taking the vaccine because we have to continue to be safe. So we're really not sure what the truth is here. Also, I thought it was really interesting when he said that we are being reckless and that he says, don't lose your life. And could I just say, if I had him sitting across the table from me, I would say that there are other ways of losing your life besides dying. And yes, I do doubt the numbers, and I'll tell you why in a second, another second. I've told you many other times, but I have another a different thing to present to you. I do doubt the numbers. I doubt them terribly. I believe that people are catching COVID. Yes, I believe it's very contagious. I believe, though, that some of it is not actually COVID. And I'll give you another example of why I believe. Daniel Horowitz, there's a David and Daniel, they're both friends of mine. They've both been on the show. But this is Daniel with Conservative Review. He's written an interesting article on how Florida is leading the nation in pushing accuracy in COVID testing. And this is what he writes. It's been nearly 3 months since the New York Times discovered that a large percentage of the positive tests being reported in this country are only at trace levels and are not infections. Catch that? The New York Times discovered that a large percentage of the positive tests being reported are only trace levels and aren't infectious. Most research shows that any virus that is captured only through a CT level of about 25 and certainly above 30 is very likely to be a false or meaningless positive. This is why a Portuguese judge recently ruled that any positive test that used more than 25 cycle thresholds is not reliable and cannot be used to force quarantine. And then Daniel goes on to say, thank Governor DeSantis for Florida appearing to be the first state that actually is going to quantify the levels. So that the inference is that these shutdowns and closings and all of these radical responses will not take place based on false numbers. Let me read further. The Department of Health in Florida is saying all positive, negative, and indeterminate COVID-19 laboratory results must be reported via electronic laboratory reporting or by fax immediately. They want to control. They want to see what these tests really do show. Daniel writes, consider all the children who often don't have any symptoms but test positive and are taken out of school. Now consider all those who were supposedly exposed to that asymptomatic child who were taken out of school for 2 weeks. Shouldn't we try to determine whether those children actually have infectious potential, especially when we have found very little spread from children in school? Then he goes on to say, the consequences of unscientific quarantine of children are devastating. According to the Washington Post, failure rates in math and English among low-income household children in Montgomery County, Maryland, rose sixfold this year. In St. Paul, Minnesota, nearly 40% of high school students have received failing grades so far this year, and Maryland Governor Lockdown Larry Hogan and Minnesota Governor Tim Walz continue to ignore the science about CT levels and testing and the lack of spread among children. Why would we continue to indiscriminately lock down an entire society and chase our tail tracing a virus with millions of positive cases that aren't really infections? That strategy hasn't worked in containing the virus and has only worked to destroy our lives. Then again, this was never about following the science. This was always about control. And the more the public is in the dark about what is and what is not a danger for spreading the virus, the more the politicians can categorically shut us down. That's Daniel Horowitz, and we'll put that article on our Facebook page. Florida leads the nation in pushing accuracy and transparency of COVID-19 testing. Could I add, just so the doctor that we quoted just a few minutes ago knows, that Daniel is actually from Maryland. So he's one of the people not from the middle part of the country who actually thinks something's wrong here with the numbers. And so, and you can add me to the East Coast list too. All right, so that brings me to That brings me to a dispute between two CNBC hosts this week, which I thought was really very interesting, because even smart guys who know money disagree on what's happening here. This is clip 14. Let's listen.
Rick, I just as a public health and public service announcement for the audience, the difference between
a
big box retailer.
Who is this?
Hold on. The difference between The difference between a big box retailer and a restaurant, or frankly, even a church, are so different, it's unbelievable.
Going
into a big box retailer,
I disagree.
You're wearing a mask.
You can have your thoughts and I can have mine.
You're required to wear a mask.
I disagree.
It's science. I'm sorry. It's science. If
it's
you're wearing
not
a mask,
science.
It's a different story.
500 people in a Lowe's aren't any safer than 150 people in a restaurant that holds 600. I don't believe it. Sorry. Don't believe
it.
And I live in an area where there's a lot of restaurants that have fought back and they don't have any problems. And they're open.
Okay. You don't have to believe it, but let me just say this. You're doing a disservice to the viewer because the viewers need to understand it.
You are doing a disservice to the viewer. You are. You are.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I would like to keep our viewers as healthy as humanly possible. The idea of packing people into restaurants.
I think our viewers are smart enough to make part of those decisions on their own.
Completely different
I don't
things.
Think that I'm much smarter than all the viewers like some people do.
All right, so I thought that was a great exchange, and it's true. You know, people disagree because they're reading different things, and the guy that's arguing just keeps saying, it's the science. That's what I find the left uses all the time. It's the science. But it's not really the science. And to kind of further that, we have Sandra Smith interacting with Admiral Brett Giroir, I think his name is Giroir. He is a part of the president's COVID team. And it was just interesting. Let's listen to clip 8.
We obviously know what we're doing is trying to save lives with these shutdowns. But as you can see with so many of the viral stories we saw over the weekend of that business owner in California, it's also shattering many lives. What do you say when you see those business owners struggling to survive and what they're going through, the sacrifice that they are seeing?
So I see it every day, even in my neighborhood with a restaurant in the basement of on the first floor of my apartment. What really breaks my heart is that I don't know of any data that says you need to shut down outdoor dining or outdoor bars. We really wanted to limit the indoor crowded places. So I think we need to do what's necessary to turn the pandemic, but not more. That's not evidence-based. That's going to be counterproductive.
Why are they doing it then? Why are they doing it? Why are they keep saying it's the science. That's why they're shutting down all of California. Why are they doing it?
No, the science does not say that. And all of us on the task force, Dr. Fauci, Birx, Redfield, Hahn, we also, Dr. Adams, the Surgeon General, is that we do, if you're in a surge place, need to limit indoor dining and indoor bars. You don't have to close schools. You don't have to close universities. You don't have to close your major industries. You do need to wear a mask. That's critically important when you're in public and can't physically distance. Very, very important. And we see that these measures, they can be counterproductive. People get mad and upset because the science don't support them. The science does support limiting indoor dining and bars. But even now, there are many restaurants that have taken tremendous, you know, they've split the tables by 7 feet. There's plexiglass. I'd like to see a little more individual attention to these places that have invested a lot of money and are probably safer than people having a house party with 100 people there. So, you know, it's time to nuance. This is not March or April. This is December. We know what the science says. We know that there are countermeasures that are effective. And whatever the expression is, throwing the baby out with the bathwater, I think we could be causing a lot more harm by overly restrictive recommendations that are not supported by the science.
All right, so there you go. What are the science? It's the science, but maybe not. It's the science because the science says a lot of different things, and that's why a lot of people are skeptics about this. And we certainly cannot destroy business, destroy marriages, have people on drugs, drinking too much, have children abused, children dumbed down because they can't go to school, all on the outside chance that maybe they might catch COVID. Remember that 99% of people below 65 survive if they test positive for COVID. Just remember that. And 96% of people over 65 survive if they test positive for COVID. Think about that. Sandy Rios in the morning.
Merry Christmas from American Family Radio and Sandy Rios in the morning.
cannot risk overwhelming our hospitals further, and that's why our hospital systems implored the Department of Health and Human Services to extend the pause. And so we are going to give it 12 more days. We've made progress during this three-week pause. Cases and mobility have started to level off. But there is more work we need to do to protect one another.
This order, as Governor Whitmer explained, closes indoor settings where people gather without masks, notably indoor bars and dining, and where they gather in groups, including theaters, bowling alleys, casinos, group fitness.
This may be the most difficult time in our whole struggle with COVID-19 since March, especially with the holidays approaching.
Now, remember, Governor Whitmer is only thinking of the good people of Michigan when she makes those statements. Every time she restricts them, it's only for their good. I want you to remember that. That's Gretchen Whitmer, who has become really the symbol of the draconian authoritarian left that's kind of taking over the country and will take up over more of the country if we don't prevail in this election. I've asked Mitch Spangler to join us this morning because Mitch is the owner of Spangler's Family Restaurant in Jonesville, Michigan. And so when Gretchen issued her last shutdown order, Mitch and his restaurant decided they weren't going to listen. And so they did not shut down. They were threatened. And I thought this would be a really good time to have a chat with Mitch and find out how things are going. Mitch, thanks for joining us this morning.
You're very welcome, Sandy. Thanks for reaching out.
Yeah, so this is a family restaurant, right, that's been in the family for a bit. Is that correct?
That's right. We're operating in Jonesville for the 24th year now. My parents started the restaurant, and then they also have another one that I still operate that's on its 32nd year that's open at the Hillsdale Fairgrounds. So both my kids have worked with me and on the project, so we're three generations in, and it's something that we want to protect and continue for the community as well as the family.
You guys are located, you told me, 5 miles north of Hillsdale College, which is ironic and kind of cool. And so I'm sure you have people that are influenced by their good, solid instruction of their students and philosophy. So, Mitch, the first shutdown order, I'm assuming that happened, I can't remember because there have been so many, but it was the last spring for Michigan?
Yes, March 15th was our shutdown date, and then we were able to reopen for limited indoor dining June 5th, and then that lasted through this last November 15th, I believe, was the first day of the shutdown, which we did close for a week and a half and went to takeout only, at which point revenue dropped to one-fifth of what we were doing while we were open, and then that was 20% less than we'd been doing the year before. So a significant drop.
Yes, and you have how many employees?
Between 25 and 30 that we constantly employ at one level or another.
When the shutdown first happened, it amazes me. I amaze myself, and I'm sure we all suffer from this. There's so much news. And things are moving so fast in our world now, it's hard to even go back and remember how things were a few months ago. But when this shutdown was first ordered back on March 15th, did you guys shut down completely?
We shut down the takeout and delivery, and we did that March 15th to June 5th, and we operated at about 20% of normal revenue, and then it dropped to 15% because Ohio and Indiana, which were about 15 miles away, opened about 3 weeks earlier than we did. So the minute people could drive a little ways and sit down, they did.
Yes. So, okay, I can only imagine because I'm always, my husband and I eat out a lot. And we're always talking to restaurant owners and help staff. And we always tip very generously. We try to do everything we can. Honestly, when the shutdown first came, we would go to restaurants where we are and just support them in any way that we could. So when you first shut down, Mitch, your personal loss, I'm sure, was huge. But also, did you continue to pay your staff at the same level?
And the spring shutdown or this new one?
Yeah, the spring. Yeah, the first one. And then, you know, so how did you manage that? I guess that's the question more than, you know, what okay. I'm not really asking about the numbers, but how in the world did you manage, if you did, continue to pay them?
Well, in the spring, we had the ability of people relying on the $600 stimulus unemployment bonus.
Oh, yes,
and then,
right.
And then I have a really efficient accountant, and we got a PPP loan very rapidly, and so we were able to use that to pay the employees. However, the rules were so strict at the very beginning that all the PPP money that was allowable to pay to the employees, that they would pay them to sit home and do nothing. And it did help us because we were able to use 20% of it to pay interest and utilities and that sort of stuff. So we did get a little bit of help there. And then personally, I am a corporation, so I work for myself. So I was able to rely on the unemployment as well through that period. So that covered us. And then when we reopened, Michigan has what they call the work share program, and people could work some hours and still get their unemployment and the bonus. So that worked through the end of July. And then once August 1st hit, then I had to take on the full burden of all of the payroll and everything, which we just kept hours at minimal survivable level. And then as business gradually increased, we were able to get back up to full hours and payroll.
All right, I'm going to just insert something, and then don't let me forget. I want to come right back and then ask you now what this latest order means. But I want to insert something that you'll find interesting. You know, Ilhan Omar has a husband who's a political consultant. They married, I think, within this last year. And we now know that the consulting firm that was owned by her husband applied for and got $500,000 in coronavirus bailout money. It's called the E Street Group. Tim Minette is her husband's name. And they got $135,000 in the Paycheck Protection Program, PPP, and $500,000 for economic injury disaster loans. So I just thought you'd be encouraged to know that some people did get help when you were trying to get the PPP loan. They figured that out. So it's really disgusting, but I wanted to share that with you. Okay, so you come to this last shutdown, and then you've got to bear everything because there is no help. The Congress has not passed a bill to give out more money and help to business owners and to their employees. So how did you respond this time?
Well, that's where the decision came in, that I had no choice but to reopen. It's not so much a political statement as in I'm fighting the governor. I mean, that rolls into the whole deal because I do 1,000% disagree with her. But we were open at full capacity prior to the shutdown. We had 2 days notice, and your sales tax, your payroll taxes, your payroll and all that stuff runs a month to 2 weeks behind. We had to close November 15th. All of the mortgage payments, utility payments, and all that stuff came due on the 30th, and my accountant and I sat down and looked, and it's like, we're either going to go out of business or we're going to fight.
Yeah.
And so I attended a meeting with the International Bowling Centers Association of America, who also had David Coleman, the barber in Owosso, who made the initial stand-up attorney.
Yep.
And he laid out a plan, told us how to walk through the whole thing, and you either was offered at that meeting that you either voluntarily file for bankruptcy or you force the government to put you out of business, and then there's the potential that you have some recourse under the takings clause or something along that line. I'm not a lawyer, but in the end, to try and recoup your money if they put you out of business. So that was what gave me the glimmer of hope, and I made the decision that we were going to walk through it till the end, and it worked out well so far.
All right. Yeah, so far. Yeah, the story's not over yet. I was just curious because we've talked. There's a little town up in northern or further north in Michigan, Owosso, I think. No, Newaygo is the name of it. They rebelled in that town too. And we covered that a lot. One of the businesses there just refused to stay. And people came, after we talked about it on the air, people came from all over the state of Michigan to shop there and to do business. So I'm wondering if something like that has already happened to you. Have you found people coming in to support you, Mitch?
Yes, I have. There's been people driving 2 and 3 hours. We got a call from a guy from California the other day that said he was going to fly here specifically to eat at our restaurant. And then there's been, I was invited and had the privilege to do an interview on Fox News last Saturday morning, and we got calls from all over the country as a result of that in support. And it's been overwhelmingly mind-blowing at the support and just the blessings and the gratitude.
Yeah.
And it's been crazy good. And then you mentioned the fact that we're close to Hillsdale and Hillsdale College. Well, one of my neighbors that lives right down the street, who's a good customer, called me a week ago Tuesday morning and said, "Hey, I'm your neighbor and I'm an attorney and I would like to represent you pro bono if you'll let me to make sure that the governor does not get a victory flag in Hillsdale County. And oh, by the way, I'm the lead counsel for Hillsdale College. I will not be representing you as a staff member of Hillsdale College, but I want to reach out as a neighbor, and community needs to stick together. So God bless me hugely in that way as well."
Mitch, that's great. And in the meeting that you described, I don't think you said, and I read, correct me if I'm wrong, that there were 70 restaurant owners at that meeting. Is that from all over Michigan?
Yes, they were from all over. And that was, from my understanding, I wasn't on the original conference call or Zoom call that had happened 3 days before that, but there were hundreds on the Zoom call. And I don't have the current number that's represented in the group lawsuit that David Coleman is filing for that group. But it's a lot more than 75.
All right. So does that mean that those restaurants are remaining open also?
The other day, I can't verify this number, but 3 or 4 days ago, somebody told me that they had checked the stats and there were 17 restaurants open in the state at that point. And I do know that there's two more that decided to open within 20 miles of me. I have talked to both of them prior to and just encouraged them that they had to make their own decision and be ready to weather the storm if they do it. And it looks like they're ready to weather the storm.
So in a case like this, I know that the health officials, I think, came in and told you you were going to have to shut down and you told them you were not going to. But how about your sheriff in your county? Because I know some sheriffs are refusing to enforce the governor's orders. So how about your county?
Yes, our county has a sheriff that was just elected. He hasn't taken elected office yet, but our other sheriff retired a month or two ago. So he quote, the temporary sheriff, but he is the elected sheriff now. And I spoke with him Friday morning before I reopened on Saturday, and he gave me his assurances that there would be no law enforcement action from his office.
Wow. Is that a blessing, too? That's such a blessing. It really is. All right. Well, Mitch, if I were to drive up to Family Restaurant, a Spengler Family Restaurant, what would you have? What's on your menu? What kind of, is it like, it's family food, mashed potatoes, gravy, meatloaf? I mean, what are we talking about?
Yes, we do breakfast, lunch, and dinner. We have, like you just mentioned, all of those. And our meatloaf recipes, my mom's, we grew up on that one. And then we did, when we moved to this new building, we did upgrade a little bit. We do steaks and pastas and some seafood and that sort of stuff. But it's, like you said, it's mainly the good old comfort that people come in and they say, if we want a meal that tastes like home, we come here. And it's gone over very well prior to the shutdown. The move was a very good thing. We were blessed well with tons of support in the community. And so we do breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and it goes well.
Well, that's great to hear, and that sounds like my kind of food. I want to just say, though, Mitch, that you recognize by doing this that you are taking a risk. We don't know which direction things are going to head. Like, we're in a precipice right now. We're kind of like we are really dangling on a fence, and we don't know which way the fence is going to go. You know, and so there is a risk involved here, and so I just want to say that because I appreciate your courage, so appreciate your courage. And we wish you all the best, and I'm hoping that my listeners will come and see you and eat that good, wonderful food and tell me about it. In fact, my husband might, and I might fly there and taste it too, Mitch. Just don't be surprised if we show up. But it's Mitch Spangler, owner of Spangler Family Restaurant in Jonesville, Michigan, and we do encourage you to support him in every way you possibly can. And thanks for your courage, Mitch. It's great to talk to you. God bless you and your family. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Christmas from American Family Radio and Sandy Rios in the Morning. Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
The choices between us are stark. Between health and sickness, between care and apathy, and yes, between life and death for too many of the people that we love. My message couldn't be simpler. It's time to hunker down. It's time to cancel everything, and if it isn't essential, don't do it. Don't meet up with others outside your household. Don't host a gathering. Don't attend a gathering. And following our targeted safer at home order, if you're able to stay home, stay home.
In fact, as a matter of fact, Eric Garcetti, the mayor of Los Angeles, he's even told them that they needed to not celebrate Christmas. And so that's what it's like. We just heard from a Michigan business owner talking about what it's like to live under the governor of that state. And now San Francisco and Los Angeles and the state of California are in a horrible lockdown, a horrible situation. There is a young, very pretty owner of a business called Pineapple Grill in Los Angeles. She was heard just earlier this week just kind of laying out how much money she'd spent on her outdoor facility to try to make it possible for people to eat there. She'd spent, I think, something like $50,000 to make that happen. And yet they closed her down anyway, without warning, closed her down after she'd spent all that money. And they let a movie set erect tents just a few yards from her place and set up tables to feed the crew and people that were working on the movie. And she was very upset about it. Well, she was on MSNBC telling her story just a few nights ago, and I want you to hear it. Let's listen.
Small businesses, we are destitute. I mean, we're looking at something worse than the Great Depression. And most of us were basically on our last breath and they shut us down again. I did everything right. I had temperature checks. I had gloves. I had shields. I was outdoors. My tables were 7 feet apart. I mean, I went above and beyond and I spent $60,000 to $80,000 doing everything that they wanted. We're at a very, very crucial moment in history right now. Because I can tell you 5 bars or hairstylists that cannot reopen, that did not get PPP. I'm one of the lucky ones. You know, I'm considered the lucky ones. And the ones that have, like me, that came out to my protest, 1 month left. I mean, baked potato has been around for 50 years. You know, it's there's not going to be any businesses left. And small businesses are the heart. We're the heart of the community. And if you pull out the heart, there's... the body doesn't live, right? I mean, we need help. We need real help. We need to open in a safe way. And myself, I have tuberculosis. So when this is another thing that's very upsetting, is this idea that we can all stay at home. My staff can't stay at home. I can't stay at home if we don't eat and we can't pay our rent. you know, my employees are out of, they're out of unemployment. You know, most of them, my manager has a little boy. She's out of unemployment. I hired a new girl, you know, 2 weeks training, and then had to tell her she had no job. She's a 3-year-old. Yeah. She can't pay her rent.
And there was more to it. That's so sad. She was on MSNBC, and, you know, the anchor did not challenge her. Surely, to goodness, this is not what we want for our country. And in the guise of saving lives, this is what they're doing to people, devastating them, destroying their businesses. Well, Alex Berenson, who is my go-to person, he's a former New York Times reporter, was on Martha McCallum after that report came out about her situation. And there are a lot of businesses that have been on television out of California where they're just devastating small businesses. And Alex had a great response. I want you to hear it. Let's listen.
Masks, if they do anything, are extremely marginal. Okay, so the idea that somehow, because it's a restaurant, you're taking your mask off, we have
you
to
know
punish
that,
those
you know, people are going to hear that, Alex, and they're going to freak out because the mask, you know, is so entrenched.
I know what they should read the booklet, okay? But you know, when you began this segment, you talked about this idea of penance, and I was really struck by that, mm-hmm. that we are punishing people, and you know, there's no, as you said, everybody wants to be out. It's Christmas, it's the holiday season. People go out with their friends, they go out with their families, and half the country is too terrified to leave its homes, and they want to punish the other half that actually understand the science here and are not going to be terrified of an illness that primarily hurts the extremely elderly and extremely sick. Okay, that does not mean we shouldn't try to protect those people, but to say that the rest of us have to stay inside and be afraid and try to terrify us is wrong. Yeah. And I am getting upset about it because, you know, a few days ago, I got an email from a woman. She said, I had a clothing boutique. I tried to make it work with the lockdowns. I had to close it in September. These days, I stay in bed crying when my kids are stuck at home, which they are a lot of the time. I get in the car and drive around to nowhere because I don't want them to see me crying. Except the other day, I drove past a gun shop and I had to make sure that I didn't go in. Okay, this is what we are doing to people, and we're doing it for no reason at all. Except to make a bunch of people who think they're in charge feel better about the decisions they're making.
That's interesting to me that, nothing he said surprises me because that's how I feel about it too. And I get so angry myself. But I was interested that he was talking to Martha. Martha's been really, I think, bad on this. She's like, mask. All the people at Fox were doing that early on. Fox was one of the worst networks, really, for enforcing that whole false narrative and Fauci this and Fauci that. And it's done tremendous damage. And now to businesses that are closing. And there are people are going to be hungry. The consequences are going to be very real. Alex went on to talk with Martha a little bit further about those consequences. Let's listen.
110,000 restaurants in this country have closed probably permanently. 37% of operators say they're unlikely to make it much longer. And you bring up the issue of mental health. Look at this Gallup. In this Gallup poll, how would you describe your own mental health? Excellent. 34%. That number is 8 points lower than the lowest measurement that Gallup has ever found. And you can see how the numbers go down. Why isn't that a bigger consideration? All of what you're describing, consideration, Alex.
Why isn't it a bigger consideration? Why don't we care about the fact that overdoses are up all over this country? Why don't we care about the fact that in a lot of the country right now, if your kid needs a psychiatric admission, they're going to be waiting days or weeks because the psychiatric hospitals for kids, which we don't have that many of, are completely full right now. We are stressing our children. We're stressing all of us, but we're stressing our children in a way that we never have before. And it's completely wrong because these kids are at basically zero risk. I said that 6 months ago or 8 months ago, and believe it or not, Sean Hannity yelled at me about it, and it turned out it's true. Even Anthony Fauci acknowledges it now. The schools should be open. We should not be doing this to our kids, and we should not be doing it to ourselves.
Yeah. All right, Alex Berenson, again, my hero on this issue. And I'm going to quote someone else in a minute that I trust, but first, speaking of mental health, it's not just the kids. It's not just the kids. It's people like the teacher in Oregon that we heard earlier in the week who was driving by a protest of people in Bend, Oregon. They were protesting the shutdowns over COVID. And they were peacefully protesting. I saw pictures, families, you know, just to, and she stops her car in front of the protesters and begins to scream She says, basically, kill yourself, B. I am a teacher. I mean, her expletives were amazing. You should hear it. And you tell me if you think this young teacher teaching our children has lost her mental capacity. Let's listen. Does that sound like a balanced person to you? That sounds like insanity. That sounds like something that you would hear if you walked down the halls of a facility where they confine people because they're just out of control. And she's a teacher. And why is that? Is it because she's been confined from COVID? Is it because she's the product of insane teaching? I want to give you another example of that insanity in a policy in Oregon. Oregon has a policy. They have the coronavirus program, which is giving federal funds to help people. That was a few months ago when they had this program. Well, they created out of those federal funds what they call the Oregon Cares Fund. And rather than give it to all of their citizens, they were giving the federal funds to black people only. That's Oregon. So only black people can have money for COVID relief. I don't know if that's a blank. There must be some percentage. I don't know, but that's what the headline says. Giving federal funds to black people only. That's in Oregon. This is insanity. COVID has really, I think, revealed the insanity that has broken out among our people. And I would just say that personally, I believe that each of us, because the mind is so complex, each of us, without the careful design and the order, again, I use this again, that God places in our lives that brings sanity to our minds, all of us will go insane. You think about the people that are put in prisons, in solitary confinement, or prisons of war, and some of them have kept their sanity by, you know, you've heard stories about how they would engage in incredible projects in their mind in order to keep themselves sane. But a lot of people just spin out of control and they just do go crazy because the mind is very complex. And I think we are seeing, I think if you knew, the rates of mental health deteriorating in this country among the young, Alex mentioned the children, but among obviously the young people like that teacher, younger people. And then imagine the old people in the homes who can no longer take care of themselves, alone for months by themselves, facing the end of their life with the inability to have their parents, their children, their grandchildren. It is a crime against God's design for humans to separate us in this way. It is so destructive, and that's the reason why I get so angry about mask wearing. It is the outward symbol of what I call suppression, domination. I want to read a couple of things to you. This is from an article by Daniel Horowitz called How Magical Masks Can Achieve More Than 100% Efficacy. They work even when they don't work. He talked about how on June 24th, Nevada Governor Steve Sisolak said, when at least 80% of the population adopts universal masking, it results in a substantial reduction of infection. And then Daniel asked, well, what are the results with 93% compliance? So how about 95%? So he's claiming that the statistic of 80%, the point is, how could he possibly know that? During the September 29th presidential debate, Joe Biden said, if we just wear a mask, we can save half those numbers. Just a mask. But the problem is, Daniel goes on to point out that the lockdowns in these areas, like California, they've been locked down for months. And something like 99% of the people in California are wearing masks. You can't go into businesses. You can't do anything. And they're suffering an outbreak now. They've been social distancing, masking. And places like Florida are much freer. Florida had sort of an uptick in cases last summer. But now it's not much. And California is experiencing this really uptick in cases, even though they are draconian in their attempts to make people wear a mask, and people are complying. And so there's an analysis by an organization called Rational Ground, and what they pretty much showed is that mechanical season and geographic spread patterns, it demonstrates that the time and place are the active ingredients, even when individual states within the same region employed very divergent policies. In other words, what we've been saying is these outward things, these little things, do not stop viruses from spreading. Viruses spread, and sometimes they're seasonal. And that is what we're experiencing around the country. And yet, the madness continues. And I am concerned about the madness that's going to continue. So we need more of God and less of this confusion, because certainly He can sort this out. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.